building a team centers around trust, listening, and candor and vulnerability. Those are all investments in building trust with your team.
These are originally live chat sessions that I held, and you can join them in the future every Tuesdays at 5 p.m. PST on sales.n.pixels on Instagram. My name is Koji, and this is Sales and Pixels.
Audrey is a VP of design at Lyft. Previously, she was a design director at Thumbtack, where she helped to build the design team there. Audrey is also my boss. And Audrey has an amazing journey and very open, light, and fun way to lead based on listening, vulnerability, connection, and trust. So we'll share a lot about the challenges of building new teams and the growth pains with building new teams. So Audrey, thanks so much for being here today. I really appreciate it. I'm so stoked to have you here today.
Thank you, Koji. I'm excited to be here today. It's not awkward at all that I'm your boss. This won't affect your performance review. No, I'm just kidding.
No, it's awesome. Like, it's great that we can have like such a, you know, out of work environment conversation, although we still are working from home. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the reasons why I built this is like, I definitely want to reconnect with people that inspired me along with my career. And also open the discussion for other people who are listening to us right now. All right. So first, I want to introduce by talking about the great reference that you are for many designers, including myself. And I think like a lot of people that I work with, we don't talk much about like when have you or how do you start in your design career? And that was like, maybe the first thing, very simple question, but maybe the first thing that crossed my mind. I really don't know how Audrey started in her design career. So
yeah,
let's start with that.
Yeah, so I took a very roundabout route to design that I don't think was very uncommon for when I joined the field, but is less common now probably. I think there are more options and more programs. But when I was first in school, I studied art history and visual arts, and I thought I was destined to be a painter. And I ended up, when I graduated, I just didn't know design existed as a profession. I thought you could be an architect or like a fine artist.
Did you know that I did painting in school?
You did?
I did fine arts.
Were you oil or acrylic?
I did both. I didn't like oil that much because of the smell.
Yeah.
But I still paint sometimes.
Nice. Oddly enough, I feel like I liked it more because of the smell. But anyways, so let's see. Then I, when I graduated, I went and I worked at Art Forum, which is an art magazine. And I got the job that they would give me, which was being an ad runner between the ad department and the production department. So I got to know the graphic designers on the production team. And they were all my, like, they all became really good friends of mine. And from them, I was introduced to graphic design, and they were like, you should go take some night classes. So I did in New York. And then at some point I found my way to a night class around product design, which I also didn't know existed. And it was hosted by a couple of Art Center grads, and I loved it. I'd just fallen in love with it. And they were like, you have to apply to Art Center. So I did, and I went through the program there, which was amazing, but it was physical products. But that's how I really like got introduced into design. And then after I graduated, you know, down the road, sort of through various routes of design strategy, got reintroduced to digital product design.
Mm-hmm. So you had this whole round around arts,
yes,
and then industrial design back to product design.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Totally.
It's interesting. I think like a lot of designers have this very diverse background when it comes to design, you know, arts and, you know, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
Okay. And actually, I don't know how many other professions have this, you know, like possibility of like like so broad umbrella like design.
Yeah.
I read your article you wrote in 2017, and I was fascinated because I was like, okay, I'm a manager, and I think there are so many great insights here. I was, you know, talking to you this morning and saying, like, I think every manager should read this because you collected a great number of things that are very, very important when you're managing people. Just to mention some. You talk about listening, you talk about candor, you talk about connection, vulnerability, and I would love to hear a little bit more about that. Like how, what are the main pillars that you believe are very important when building a team, building the connection with the team?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So for me, building a team centers around trust, right? And human connection. And so all of the things you just listed, like listening and candor and vulnerability, those are all investments in building trust with your team. And if you can't trust your team and your team can't trust you, then the building will not really happen and it will be really, really hard. So that's why for me, like when I wrote that article, those really, when I sat down and I thought about it, like what helped me build the beginnings of the team at Thumbtack, it really came down to those qualities. I would say too, for me as a leader, if I don't connect with a team, it's really hard for me to want to do my job. So as you know, it's like, I'm the first one to take a conversation on a tangent. I'm the first one to, you know, like talk about some random stuff. You know, like my love of the Pitch Perfect franchise. But regardless, you know, I think all of these things just help you connect on a deeper level. And that sense of connection, I think, helps to drive more trust and then more efficiency, as well as just like alignment around shared goals. And I would say too, like, I think one thing I've learned too is vulnerability and humility are two of the most important qualities. Because no leader like knows 100% what they're doing, right? A lot of the times
sometimes we don't know anything. That happens.
So yeah, I mean, we don't know. We don't know what we're doing. We just know if we've done stuff before, we know like some things that might work, right? So I rely so heavily on my teams to point me in the right direction, to help me understand like where I should focus and, you know, what problems need to be solved. So if I wasn't to listen to a team, then like that wouldn't happen. And I had to learn all of these things the hard way. Like I learned that I should start with listening because there was a moment when I didn't listen. There, actually, if you ask my teams, they'd probably be like, there are many moments and they probably still happen. But I don't, you know, there were a couple that stand out at my time at Thumbtack where I was so eager to be decisive and to sort of like be efficient. And then, you know, I would just like make a decision and tell the team I made it. And I realized like, oh crap, like doing that, they were super pissed off at me. It eroded trust, and trust is very hard to build. So I learned, you know, that lesson the hard way for sure.
Mm-hmm. And I like where you talk about like random conversations, and you know, I can totally see that in you. And one of the things that
you're like, you do it all the time.
No, I mean like it's I think it's like important quality of you that you make people comfortable, you know, like make people laugh. One of the things that I was about to say is that when I joined your team, I talked with some people, and the top feedback was like, Audrey makes me laugh, and that's awesome. Like, I don't have that much space at work. And I think people really, really appreciate that. Like, we spend most of our time at work, mm-hmm. right? Like, if we think about 8 hours versus, you know, the time we sleep and then some time we spend at home. Now we're all working from home anyways,
yeah.
But you know what I mean. And if we don't have fun or if we don't have connection with the people we work with, it's very hard to be productive and have the meaning that you talk about in some of your writings and talks that I revealed these days.
I know. I mean, like, think about everything we're all going through right now, right? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, we have to be able to have both like really hard conversations and mix it with the light conversations. Like if we only talked about the heavy stuff, oh man, that would be rough. So yeah, for me, laughter is like an important way for me to even get through some of these rougher patches.
Nice. Okay. So reading this article, I noticed that your team grew super quickly at TomTech, more than triple. And now you have a very large team at Lyft. How was the growth process and what did you learn from that process?
Yeah. So the growth process at Thumbtack was rough because it was the first time I was scaling a team ever and sort of like that quickly. So I learned everything the hard way and I felt very much like I was just feeling my way through the dark. So the first thing that I learned was that I needed to quickly find people who had seen more of this journey than I had, right? So I was like on square one of the board game. And I needed like people who had at least gotten to square 5 or 10 to be like, oh, here's what to expect from squares 2 to 4. So I reached out on LinkedIn to a couple of people who I either like had heard about from others or who, you know, we shared like art center in common or something like that. And reached out to them and some friends of mine and a couple of like cold calls actually took pity on me, met me for a coffee and gave me like some of the best advice. You know, they gave me advice. Most importantly, they gave me foresight. And then actually just as important, they gave me like a shoulder to kind of cry on and be vulnerable with because, you know, when you're scaling a team, I don't know, like you want to be vulnerable with your team, but you don't necessarily want to tell them like everything, like 100, 150%. So it was very helpful to have the community there who I could lean on and who I could reach out to with random questions too. Like, what do I do now? I have to hire my first manager. Like, what do I do? The other thing is adaptability. So even if you're growing a team from like 5 people to 10 people, like every person that you add to that mix changes the things that you have just probably figured out, right? So, you know, when I first started, I think we were like 5 people. And so we had like a design crit process, you know, we had like, we were organized in a certain way. We had Monday standups where we would talk about like what we're all working on. And then, you know, we added 2 more people and suddenly it's like, oh, we can't crit everyone's work in an hour. We can't do like the things that we'd wanted to do or that were successful for us in the past. So you quickly learn, like you have to be constantly changing and you have to get the team used to, expecting that change and adapting quickly. And then the third thing was just prioritization. I had a hard time when I was scaling the team, knowing what to focus on first. And so there was a moment when like I went to my boss who was the VP of product and I was like, oh my gosh, I have to do all these things. I have to redesign this part of the product. You know, so-and-so is unhappy. Like then I have to do some brand alignment exercise and blah, 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 blah. And I have to recruit and I have to grow the team. And he was like, so let's, and meanwhile, I'm saying all these things, rattling them off. And he's just like sketching them up on the, or writing them up on the whiteboard. And he's like, so of all these things, like, What's the one unlock? Like if there's one thing that's going to unlock everything else. And I was like, oh yeah, hiring for sure. I just hiring. And he's like, okay, then that's your focus. Like that's the one thing you need to do. And you need to get used to letting other things like fall by the wayside, which was really hard for me. But in that moment, I was like, okay, I'm going to throw all of my effort behind growing this team. And everything was sort of in service of that. So you have to do like this ruthless prioritization as your team continues to scale and get to that point where you can do all of the other things that you wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. So I guess part of that will probably also include things that you have to let go, right? Because there are certain things that scales, like hiring is something that probably you have to find a way to scale.
Yeah.
But other things you can't really like scale, and you can't do like critiques for 10 different teams, right?
Right.
How was that learning for you? Like how was the process of letting go some of those practices that maybe you're like super passionate about, and then out of the sudden you felt that I can't continue to do it?
Yeah, that was hard, you know, like as a designer, you know me, I still have design reviews, you know, it's like, and it's like my connection back to the work, and I think I will always have them. And as designers, it's really hard to separate yourself completely from process and work. And that's where a lot of our passion comes from and a lot of our drive, right, and motivation. So I think that what I had to do was, one, forgive myself a little bit and understand like, oh, I can't do this right now. And two, look at it as an opportunity for others to step up, right? So really to help other members of the team and enable them to step in and facilitate these crits and help me figure out like, yeah, how do we scale this in a way where we can still maintain consistency of like quality and everything. So it's hard for sure. And you know me, I still poke my head in, and like, if there's a project that I'm like super interested in, I feel bad for that team, because I'm always like, oh, how's it going? Like, can you come to design review? Can I see what you're working on? And actually, one of the hardest things about working from home too has been just not, losing that ability of walking around to desks and like looking over the shoulders of people and like reconnecting with design work. I'm sure like every designer is like, oh, thank God that's like not happening anymore. But you know, that like feeds my soul. So I still do it.
Yeah, the physical presence, it's very hard to replace.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So you talk about meaning and purpose a lot in your writings and some of your talks that I was reviewing. And I think it's like a big, maybe like a recurrent topic in your life. How can leaders have a clear, or not necessarily create a meaning, but how can we be aware and be diligent about thinking about meaning for our teams?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think that it's important that we all understand like why meaning is so critical. You know, like without meaning and purpose, it's really easy for teams to get disengaged, right? And without meaning and purpose, like these moments that we find ourselves in right now are really hard to come out of. Like, I think that teams, when they lack it, they get stuck in the day to day, right? They like get mired down by just the friction that we encounter day to day in our jobs. And, you know, a project gets deprioritized that you've been working on for a while. So for me, like, yeah, it's a critical part of any leader's job is to define what that is. I think one of the things that sometimes gets forgotten or that we don't end up investing in enough is how you keep the team connected and reconnected to that mission and vision, you know? So I think a lot of us probably have experience in creating what that vision is or what that mission is. But I find it really helpful to every like quarter think about what are the ways that we need to reconnect with this mission? Do we need to, like at Lyft, right? Do we need to host a driver panel and bring some drivers in and help teams reconnect with the users of our product? Or at Thumbtack, do we need to go visit some of the pros in their homes, and help like teams just, put a face to the user at the other end of the product and put a name to the impact that they're having. So I think like as designers, we're very skilled at creating empathy and creating empathy for your users and reconnecting to the mission is definitely something that I try to make a point of investing time in every quarter. I probably should be doing it more.
Makes sense. Awesome. And I appreciate that you think that way, because then our teams are supported by you too. All right. If you look back at yourself 10 years from now, what advice would you give to yourself, especially, you know, I'm talking about this mm-hmm. growth and everything that happened in your life?
Yeah. I think I would tell myself to be kind to myself. Like I have this want to always be 100% sure about something, or to, I don't know, be the one to deliver like a perfect solution. And I think the first thing I would say to myself, especially as I embarked on sort of this leadership journey, would be, be nice to yourself. You're going to mess up and you're going to trip along the way, and nobody expects you to be perfect. And, you know, just take it easy on yourself. The other thing I would say is no one, like I said before, you know, no one really knows what they're doing. So trust your instincts and fight for what you think is right. I think sometimes, you know, we convince ourselves that like, oh, somebody else must have thought of this thing, or, oh, you know, I'm sure we're dealing with this thing in some other area of some other part of the business or whatever. And I would tell myself, like, don't just assume that, right? And trust your instincts. And if you feel like there's an opportunity or there's a problem, or, you know, or you should stand up for like an individual or a group of people, do it and throw your back into it.
Very nice. Yeah. Trust yourself, trust your instincts, and be kind to yourself. I definitely feel that, especially the be kind to yourself, is very, very hard when you're like in the midst of this crazy growth trajectory.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. But very important. All right. Some designers focus a lot on the craft of design, on, you know, what's the new cool tool around, is Figma, or is it, I don't know, InDesign, or InDesign InVision, or InDesign is too old.
Quark.
Quark Express, CorelDRAW. No. And sometimes we forget to think about communication skills and how we collaborate with cross-functional partners. How do you, you know, and, you know, sometimes we say this is like soft skills, right?
Yeah.
How do you think those things are important in contrast to each other, or how to find the right balance?
Yeah. I mean, it's all important, right? Like, and we need to start thinking about like communication skills, collaboration skills, as just as important as the skills of craft, right? Like, because if you've worked at any company, you can attest to the fact that you can't ship a product on your own, right? So that's where cross-functional collaboration is key, right? You're dependent on the success of other people and on their investment in you and your ideas to help see things through. And I think you learn that quite quickly once you leave school and you join a team of any sort, or you join a company and you're trying to ship something that's larger than yourself. The other thing is, communication is one of our greatest skills as designers, right? Like, we're, I think storytelling is something that we need to continue to nurture as part of the skill of craft, right? And I think that it helps us. It helps us like build empathy for our users amongst like a diverse set of people. I think it helps us like convey the potential impact of our designs. We have the ability to speak in multiple languages to multiple functions. And that's highly reliant on our investment in communication. The other one I'll throw in there is facilitation. So as designers, we are super skilled and often sit at the intersection of multiple needs, I guess. So like whether it's user needs, business needs, and, you know, societal needs or something like that, we're often right at the middle of that, trying to do that negotiation, right? Like, how do we find that alignment? What's that sweet spot? And I think that, facilitation is often a skill that doesn't get spoken about enough. We don't have enough training around that. We all sort of inherently do it, but we're not, I think we need to invest more in building out that skill set and helping provide teams with the tools to facilitate the conversations that will end up with alignment around a shared goal and ultimately like products in the hands of users. Yeah. And it's really tricky, I think, for me. I don't think it's a trade-off, right? It's more like you unfortunately need to do it all. Like, you know, you have to do it all. And in moments you'll rely on one skill more so than the other.
Right.
Like now as a leader, I rely a lot more on my skills of communication and collaboration and facilitation a lot more than like my hard skills of craft or my knowledge of certain tools. It's interesting how you see like the balance of that investment sort of wax and wane over time. Or like,
do you think with seniority that will probably increase for both ICs and managers?
Like the focus on communication and collaboration.
Collaboration.
Yeah, I think so. I think so because you're dealing with like a lot. You're dealing with stakeholders at like a higher level. You're often having to coordinate across teams instead of just within your immediate cross-functional team even. So I think that, yeah, those skills become a lot more necessary like the more senior you get and as your scope increases specifically.
Right. Cool. And in your opinion, this is a little bit of shifting gears again, but what, looking at the future, what are the areas that you believe are promising for design as a whole?
Yeah. So I was thinking about this last night because I'm like the worst person at these types of questions because I'm super self-centered and I'm like, oh, stuff that will help me. So the first thing that came into my mind, because I have two kids, they're 6 and 3, is anything around education and specifically around remote learning. Like I feel like one thing that we've all learned in the last 6 months is how broken some of these or non-existent these systems and support systems are that we are becoming increasingly reliant on, but then also like all the potential that they have to unlock and in many ways like democratize like things like education. But I will tell you, as a parent who has tried to help a 6-year-old like sit in front of a Zoom call for an hour, yeah, they suck. So there's a lot of opportunity for design to really improve and raise the bar there. And then I think sustainability obviously is huge. I think that designers are such strong problem solvers, and there's no greater problem right now than like the effects of climate change and the need for more sustainable materials and processes and goods. And then I would say, you know, transportation for sure. And
Of course. Join us.
yeah, totally. This is where I like, there should be a Lyft logo right here. But yeah, I think just because like transportation, if you just look at what's happened within the last 6 months, like we are so beholden to these very antiquated systems, and there's so much opportunity for us to change or continue to change the game. And then I'll throw another one in there just because like I think it's super interesting. But when I think about like design for the space experience and data as it relates to that, I feel like data design is ripe with opportunity. Like we see it internally too, right, Koji? Like Just helping teams make sense and individuals make sense of data and utilize it in a way that is more more accessible. Yeah,
right.
It's huge.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, just demystifying a lot of things that's still kind of obscure.
Yeah.
I would even include like programming that too.
Yeah.
It's still very difficult.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. All right. So now I have this section. It's rapid fire.
Oh, gosh.
But it's very simple. And I think it's going to be very fun.
Says you.
And are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Something that makes you upset.
Lack of integrity.
A dream.
A dream. Oh. I'm breaking the rules of rapid fire already. So I don't know. I want to say an equitable future.
Love that. Worth the time. Something you could never learn.
Something I could never, like from a book, you mean?
Anything. Your interpretation.
Okay. Something I could never.
Something you tried to learn and you never were able to.
Oh, okay. 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 Yeah. Something I could never learn. Oh, riding a skateboard.
Yeah, that's very tough. And then the last one is the future is ...
The future is, oh man. The future is ours to have or to lose.
Love it. Yes.
Sort of bleak though.
That's the fun part. It's, you know, just to improvise. Before we wrap up, I want to give you some space to say anything, or if you want to give some final advice or leave some books for people, whatever you want to say. This is your space.
Oh my gosh. Koji, a little heads up. So I would say, you know, I can't stress this enough. Like, just try new and different things. Like, I think when I first became a manager, first got into leadership, you know, I tried to order all these books from like Amazon, you know, and I was like, oh God, okay, first 90 days. Okay, let me read this first 90 days. Okay, I gotta go read like Managing Human Beings. Okay, what does this say? And really, like, the best way to learn is just to do, you know, like try things. Iterate on it. Like managing a team, leading a team is just like any other design problem, right? You have to understand what the gaps and the opportunities are, what the constraints are, and then you have to try different solutions until you find something that has impact and works. And then you have to, like, you know, iterate upon that process. So I would say, like, just start by trying and doing, and then don't be afraid to fall and fail. You know, like I've fallen so many times, I continue to fall. And you'll learn to trust yourself more, and your team will see and recognize you for trying, and for trusting, and they'll believe in you, you know? So it's not about like getting stuff 100% right. It's not about being, you know, following a formula. It's about leading authentically, trying new things, and yeah, showing up in a way that makes you proud to lead your team. I wish I could have come
love
up with
it.
Something better, but
that's perfect, Audrey. I loved it. Very inspirational. So thanks for your time. Thanks for accepting my invite. I really appreciate, and I learned a lot today. I hope that everyone here also enjoyed their time. So that's it, Audrey. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. This is so awesome.
My name is Koji. And this is Cells and Pixels. Every Tuesdays at 5 p.m. PST on cells.n.pixels on Instagram. Thanks for listening.